Welcome to TLDR Auspol, the podcast for the engaged-ish people of the world.
Welcome to TLDR Auspol.
Woohoo!
We have had a couple of goes at me going, welcome, and Ree going, no, no.
It should be known that, like, we've had so much help in actually, like, recording this podcast. A couple of you have said that the audio sounds quite great, which is really lovely. That's no doing of ours by any stretch of the imagination. We were left to our own devices tonight to record. And so, yeah, Annabelle was like, can I do the intro for this one? And I was like, yeah, of course.
The one time I'm never going to try again.
My plan worked. Just kidding. Just kidding. But anyway, we made it. We made it to what episode number is this?
It's number six.
Six?
It's number six.
It's number six. You're right.
I was just thinking about how your intros are so warm, though. You're like, welcome to TLDR pod. But you say it right. Although you didn't the other time. You
no,
said
I didn't. Also, I think I just proper laughed into the mic for the first time this whole thing, and I probably broke
it was
some
just
ears.
Such a it's just such a beautiful warm, and I was a bit like, we're probably not, this is probably not going to be recorded because we've tried this about 400 times. Welcome to TLDR Auspol. This is episode six.
Episode number six.
And if I'm doing this officially now, the intro. And this episode is sort of centered around climate change.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I do want to start by saying while this policy isn't all of climate change, it's a particular policy relating to that.
Mm-hmm.
And while I listen to you.
Yeah, that caught in the mic, didn't it?
In the background. I do want to say that climate change is something that I find very terrifying as a mother. I think we all find terrifying as humans.
Mm.
You know, there's no doubt that climate change is going to is devastating and on the horizon. So I was really excited that you brought this policy for us to discuss. Because it's one kind of cog in the wheel, I suppose, or one certain response that we could talk about, and we could talk a little bit about climate change in that and the Paris Agreement and that sort of thing. But I did want to sort of start with you just maybe giving a bit of context as to where this policy came from and why we've chosen it.
Yeah, so earlier this year, so if you were listening to episode number five, you'll know that I just made a super exciting announcement about my job and about making a move into the policy space.
You're still buzzing from that, hey?
I'm still riding the high. I have been trying to make that move for a little while, so have been looking at making a move into working somewhere in the policy and politics space, but I didn't quite know where. Anyway, I got through really close to a recruitment round with the Department of the Prime Minister and Cabinet that was looking at policy communications. And at the end of the recruitment round, they said to me, we want to get you to do a writing task. We're going to give you a policy. We want you to distill it down into a page and also create some campaigns around it. So tell us who you'd communicate to and what about the policy you would communicate. And so it kind of was the inspiration for TLDR Auspol because the process of understanding a policy to the point of being able to write one page on it and also work out what mattered to different people was a really powerful process for me in understanding how I was approaching thinking about policy, what I could glean from the different like conceptual positions about climate change and that kind of thing from this policy. And so it was kind of what I brought to you in the first place, saying I just had to do this as part of a recruitment round. I reckon we could do this on all sorts of policies and do that distillation for people so that they don't have to do the legwork in understanding policy to that degree. So yeah, but it's really, there's a number of reasons I love this policy, and we're going to get into that a little bit throughout the episode. But it also is a policy that's quite close to, I wouldn't say my heart, but like quite close to some things that I find really exciting.
Yeah. So what's the policy, right?
The policy is the emissions reduction through technology investment. I can't remember if it's called a roadmap or a framework or a plan.
This is why I got you to say that bit. I constructed this whole intro so that you would have to say that and I wouldn't have to try and get my mouth around that.
You totally set me up and I fell. I forget what it actually is because I don't know, the government puts out stuff all the time. It's like one of those things. I sometimes think they're all the same anyway.
What's the difference between a framework and a plan and a road? Anyway, let's...
Different discussion.
So, yeah. So, that's what we're going on today. And yes. I think it's really important. We've had some real heated kind of moments in unpacking this one.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that Ree and I sort of landed on was to try and keep it to this policy. It's going to be the most useful and interesting way to tackle this.
And I think it's worth acknowledging that the times for us that this conversation got quite heated and quite hard to have in some ways. Excuse me, I had a frog in my throat.
You're pouring drinks, you're coughing.
Yeah, that's right.
I had a coughing fit at the end of the other one.
Yeah, you did. We're on form tonight. Where it got quite hard was when we were then trying to have discussions about like the whole of climate change policy, and it's just impossible to do that in one conversation. You know, when like climate change is something that affects everything, you know, it's something that really needs to be tackled from every industry perspective. Mm-hmm. You know, it needs to be tackled at every level of government as well. And so picking up one policy and then trying to like retrofit in an entire strategy to solve a problem that's bigger than the world has ever seen before is like almost impossible to have a super constructive conversation. And so like we got down to brass tacks, you know, one night over dinner where I'm pretty sure I told Annabelle she was crazy. Like I was just like, you're insane.
You said, I'm surprised at you. And it was like, oh.
It's almost like, as bad as saying I'm disappointed.
I'm not angry, I'm just disappointed.
Yeah, yeah. I was very surprised. I remember that conversation. But anyway, so what we're doing with this particular episode is we're acknowledging the limitations and saying we're not looking at this as the comprehensive climate change policy that the government is taking. We're looking at this as one of the ways they've said they're tackling climate change. Do we have details at this stage on all of the other ways that we hope they're tackling climate change? No. Like Annabelle and I have not researched all of those things. We've simply looked at this one thing. Yeah. This one thing that also has been in the news, you know, that they released their first report as a part of this, plan or framework or whatever the heck it is, you know, in the last couple of months. So it's timely for us to be looking at this approach. But yeah, just keeping in mind that we're not trying to get into the whole of the climate change debate. We're just saying, let's take a look at this one policy, have a chat about what merit we think it has and what pitfalls we think it has, and have a bit of a conversation about that.
And I think it's worth mentioning that I found through the Climate Council the policies of the major parties. So they've got the Liberal National Party, the Labour Party and the Greens.
Yeah.
So we can put that in the show notes. So if you want a sort of first step of starting to, you know, uncover what the climate change response looks like in a big way or in a sort of grand way. That wasn't a better way of explaining it at all. That it's there.
If you're wanting to understand the landscape of like how different party ideologies impact their approach, then that kind of thing is really good.
So we'll kick it off a little bit, and I want to start just a bit of with some context because this was learning for me as well. So I want to sort of start by talking about the Paris Agreement. So the Paris Agreement was signed by 196 countries, including Australia, and it's got a goal to limit global warming to well below 2, preferably 1.5 degrees Celsius compared to pre-industrial levels. And through the Paris Agreement, the EU are claiming to be climate neutral, which is to have zero carbon emissions by 2050. And quite a few Australian states are on board with that, you know, that goal. And I believe the federal government are on board with that goal as well.
Yeah.
So at the time of recording, the Morrison government is about to release updated national greenhouse gas emissions projections.
Yeah.
And they claim that Australia is nearly on track to meet the targets that they've previously set out under the Paris Agreement.
I think it's worth noting here, though, so while Australia might have said they're on board with zero carbon emissions by 2050, that wasn't the commitment, right? So they're like, that's like the overarching, the big, hairy, audacious goal, but the commitment that the countries have made is much smaller milestones than that, right?
I believe so.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, I believe so. So I've got a few quotes here. So the Minister for Energy and Emissions Reduction, who's Angus Taylor, who I'll be calling Gus from here on out,
our mate Gus.
So he says the Morrison government has a clear plan through our $3.5 billion climate solutions package to continue our strong track record and meet our 2030 Paris commitment. So that is a commitment. And this, the commitment is to reduce targets of 26% below the 2005 levels. And it, for me, it essentially falls in a straight line from the 2020 target, which is to reduce emissions by 5% by 2020 relative to 2000. And the Paris Agreement sort of states that developed countries are expected to take on a stronger commitment as we go forward and as we continue. I learned a little acronym, which is NDCs, Nationally Determined Contributions.
Oh.
So that's what should be a progression from the last decade to reflect its highest possible ambition. So on this, Gus says, on a per capita or emissions intensity basis, Australia's 2030 target is more ambitious than those adopted by France, Norway, Canada, Japan, or South Korea. And that since 2005, Australia's emissions have fallen faster than the G20 average and the OECD average, and faster than Japan, New Zealand, and the United States. And I hope I sound like him when I deliver that message.
I'm never going to be able to hear Gus speak without hearing you now.
Gus says, when we make commitments, we meet them.
Wow.
I sounded like Julia Gillard then.
You do sound like
Jules.
Yeah.
I love Jules. So the government has even suggested that they could meet and beat its 2030 target by 145 million tonnes across the decade.
Huge.
So one of the things that I've kind of said here, well, my thought on this is, given there's bipartisan recognition that climate change is serious, and that's where we started with the episode, why not be more ambitious to reflect what the climate science says is necessary here?
I think there's a couple of things in, like, a couple of counter questions that, like, or counter thoughts that appear in my mind when you ask that question. One of them is, like, there's so many unknowns in this space, you know, like, not without denying the fact that climate change is real and that we have to do something. I feel like it's really hard to predict the impact of, like, one particular strategy in a country when there's, like, it's the sum of the whole, you know, and it's about how much the individuals take responsibility for their part to play as well and, you know, like, all those kinds of things. Mm. And so, you know, I think in some ways that's kind of why the Paris Agreement was, like, broken down into, like, we've got a big, hairy, audacious goal so that we're, you know, like, inspiring and that we're making sure that, like, everyone knows that we're moving towards more. But we also need to start somewhere and to see what works and to give people an opportunity to make movement that's doable. Mm. You know, because I feel like if you come out saying, like, here's the one big thing we're going to do, if you don't see movement on that people feel like is big enough, they're going to lose hope at all, you know, that you're making any progress. And so I think by, like, kind of chunking it down, you're making it heaps more palatable and achievable. Because I think that in some ways, I think the smaller that you make the goal, the more likely people are to buy into it on something like this. That's, you know,
point.
And it's kind of like if I was to turn around and be like, Annabelle, I want to run a marathon next week. You'd be like, girlfriend, let's talk about this.
You do have 45, though. I mean, you're pretty fit.
Thank you. I'll try.
You know what? Just like climate change, I reckon you be ambitious and you tackle
see what
that.
Happens.
Do that marathon.
And see what happens. But, yeah, you know, like the better way to train for a marathon would be to say, oh, I'm going to do a 5K fun run in a month's time or 6 weeks, you know, like, and kind of break it down. So I think that's kind of my immediate kind of response when you say, like, why not be more ambitious? I think that the other thing that comes to mind is, like, you know, liberal ideology, it kind of says that, like, we rely on strategy, you know, we rely on well thought out plans that utilize the existing systems and structures and that has a bit of faith in those things, but says, how do we improve them? I can't imagine a world where, like, when we say, why not do more? And there was a really good plan proposed to do more. I can't imagine our current government being opposed to it. And I think that's part of their approach with this policy, is to say, well, how do we find out what's possible in doing all that we can?
I think let's talk about the plan, because you've talked about, I think we'll break down what the actual, I'm going to say it now, the emissions reduction through technology investment plan actually
is.
So the emissions reduction through technology investment plan, or the plan.
So it is a plan?
The plan.
The plan.
Let's call it that.
It's to rapidly reduce emissions in a way that supports economic growth through a mix of government investment and private investment, which, coming from that part of the political spectrum,
checks out.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
The plan's vision is for a prosperous Australia recognised as a global low emissions technology leader. That's what I got from the website.
Yeah, nice. That's some good copywriting, government. Good job.
So the two things that I've found that are paramount to the plan in announcements and things that I've read, media statements and stuff like that, it's maintaining affordability and reliability. They're the two kind of through lines that the government are going with this. And to quote our mate Gus, this technology-led approach won't compromise energy affordability or reliability and will position Australia as a global technology leader. So I have no beef with this, with the government investing in creation of new ideas. And, like, I'm a total vegetarian on this thing. No beef, right? None. I think, you know, creating new ideas and intellectual property, like, I think government having a role in that is really, really cool.
Yeah.
So I love that as sort of on a first pass kind of basis. And like I said before, you know, coming from the right side of the political spectrum, there's no surprise here that the thought is for widespread deployment by the private sector.
Yeah.
You know, with a targeted role for public investment.
Yeah.
I do like that the government is taking responsibility for future technologies. Yeah. I just think it's cool.
Yeah, and
isn't that weird?
Yeah, no, pigs I like do it. Fly.
No beef, though.
No beef. Pigs fly, but we don't eat them. I mean, this is the part of the policy that, like, I find really sweet, right? Mm. Because it speaks right into... It speaks right into what I find really fascinating about the world right now, which is technology and innovation. Mm. And I think what I like about this plan is that the government is recognizing their limits, mm. you know, and saying, like, if they were to be responsible for creating all of the new things, it'd probably take too long,
mm.
you know. But we also have a lot of Australian businesses out there that are creating new technologies, like mm. our tech sector. Is bloody big. Our tech sector is $166 billion industry.
Wow.
You know, like, and so what we're saying is, like, why don't we, with this plan, why don't we create the conditions for the business, those tech businesses that have the ability to focus their energies, some of their energies,
yep.
into clean technology. Mm. We want to throw some cash at mm. them, but we want to let them do what they're good at, and we'll do what we're good at, which mm. is steward wisely the cash money of our country.
Or the mash cunny.
Well, that was risky. That was risky. But yeah, so I also agree with you. I think that it's really nice to see, you know, because innovating in government is risky.
Yeah.
You know, like, you're talking about stewarding our taxes mm. and it has to be done well. But what we're saying, what this plan does is says, let's define the conditions, that we want these technologies to be focusing in on,
yeah.
or the particular parts of the problem we want these technologies to be focusing in on. Gosh, I got my tongue tied on that one, didn't I?
I'm not going to try any of that stuff again. Yeah. Swapping. I got burnt.
Yeah, yeah, you're done on that one. But so I think it's really nice, you know, to say, like, let's support a big industry, but also let's support an industry that's about solving problems in new ways, because I think we're all in agreement that, like, we need to tackle this problem differently.
Yeah.
And as differently as we can.
Yeah. So let's break it down a little more. So Gus says the roadmap will guide $18 billion of Commonwealth investments towards 5 priority technologies and economic stretch goals to make the new technologies as cost effective as existing technologies.
Yeah.
So the 5 areas are hydrogen, carbon capture and storage, soil carbon, storage options, low carbon steel and aluminium production. The 5 areas come with price goals with the aim to reach the point where the cost of the technology is competitive with existing alternatives like wind and solar.
Yeah.
So while there are some areas here that I think are really cool to target, like soil carbon and storage options, the price goals, I think, focus on the wrong thing. For example, the federal government wants hydrogen production to cost less than $2 per kilogram by 2030.
regardless of whether it's produced using renewable energy or fossil fuels. And creating hydrogen uses a lot of energy. And splitting it apart then releases that energy. And the only type of hydrogen that would be useful in this context is green hydrogen, which is created using power from green sources. And I've got a lovely friend who knows who she is who talked me through that the other day. So I'm kind of a little bit aware of that. And that's what the roadmap looks like, or the framework or the plan looks like it's focusing on. But from what I've read about carbon capture and storage, it's essentially injecting greenhouse gases back into the ground. So this technology is not overly proven, not cheaper than wind and solar, and cannot ever deliver zero emissions. Cannot ever deliver zero emissions. Yeah. So to me and my perspective on all of this is the only solution to achieve zero emissions by 2050 is to stop burning coal, oil and gas.
Which is like a great statement, but...
Except I've fluffed every single word. what I'm trying to... I'm so excited to say this to you that I'm like just...
Just get out. Get it out. No, you know, I your logic is sound, right? Get to zero emissions, stop burning the things emit. But I think what...
I knew there was a but coming.
Absolutely, there's a but coming. Because what, you know, is that possible in the time frame that we're talking about was one kind of question. You know, what upgrades need to happen to our infrastructure, for example, for our grids to be able to support renewable energies? And what kind of money is that going to cost? And what other policy areas are going to suffer because there needs to be more money funneled into stopping burning coal and oil and gas. I also think that I think there's two main things that need to be done here, right? We need to not only be looking ahead to say we need to stop burning coal, oil and gas to get to zero emissions, and we need to be looking at all of the ways that, you know, in a future focus way, we have to do things differently. We also have to be solving the current problems, you know, and saying, well, are there ways now that we can be optimizing the current system so that there are less emissions being reduced in, being released into the atmosphere? And I think what this plan does more so than, you know, do the future by 2050, we need to have no coal, oil and gas, is looks at the current state and says, what is it possible for the government to do right now without having to strip resources from a bunch of other policy areas and throw every dollar we have at this thing? But yeah, what can we do now and what should we rely on other people to do, you know, better than what government could do? Because yeah, it's I don't disagree with the logic of like the easiest way to get to zero emissions is going to be by stopping doing those things, but I don't see a logical way of doing that fast without also optimizing the current system. And so I look at this plan and go, yeah, right, what they're doing is they're trying to address the current system.
Yeah. So let's look at those existing proven technologies like the coal, gas, solar and wind. So Gus says those existing proven technologies will play an important role in Australia's energy future, but are not the focus of the roadmap.
Yeah.
So, I mean, considering we have a country that with so much sun and so much wind, why aren't they the focus, those areas in here?
Yeah. It's a good question. Like, it's a great question.
Let's chuck them all out in the middle of Australia and, like, where there's nothing else going on.
And watch the wind turbines melt because it's too hot out there.
There's too much sun.
You know, look, without being a scientist of any kind, my first questions, like, the first things that come to my mind are, well, I know that our current grid doesn't support those technologies. So, like I said earlier, there's got to be huge investments into upgrading those things. You know, and are we better to spend all the money now and upgrade it right now? Or are there ways that we could make improvements in other areas to like incrementally get us to being able to spend the money that we need to, you know, and do it in kind of a sustainable way, not sustainable in terms of climate change, but sustainable in terms of expenditure and that kind of thing. You know, but also, like, what are the practicalities of those technologies? Like, my question is, like, we know we have big challenges in energy transport in Australia because we have so much land. You know, how do those energies transport? You know, one of the questions I asked a girlfriend the other day, We were having a bit of a chat about this episode, so I called my gals and I was like, what do you reckon? Mm-hmm. We had a grand old chat. It was 7:30 on a Sunday morning. Oh. Yeah. Yeah. That's what happens when you have busy friends who are all early risers. Ugh. So we were so into it. But
never call me at 7:30 a.m. on a Sunday
don't
morning.
Don't worry, I won't.
It's on record.
It's on record. But my question to this particular friend was like, what are the mechanics of like, we know that burning coal, you know, coal-powered electricity, you can store it, you know, for a certain amount of time, and our current grid supports our current infrastructure, houses, hospitals, all the rest. What are the mechanics of the sun? Like, if we have one not sunny day, is the four sunny days that you had beforehand going to support that one not sunny day? Or is it like sun in, sun out when you boil the kettle, sun in, sun out when you put your piece of toast in? Like, you know, like they're the kinds of questions that I think beg to be asked. And I'm in no position to answer them at all, but it would be great to see more dialogue about those technologies, because it's like we all have a base level understanding of like they're renewable. Why aren't we talking about them?
Yeah.
And I think if they're not in a plan somewhere, then talk about where they are, you know, because they might not be in this particular plan, because maybe they're not a technology that we see the opportunity for like huge return on investment in, you know, in terms of investing in technology. But yeah, I think it's a great question that I really don't have an answer for, but I'm also not supposed to have an answer for.
No, I mean, I was just asking the question.
Yeah. And I think it's a great question.
Sort of had, you said a lot of things then.
Yeah. I often have things to say. Thank you. Thanks.
Sorry. That was oddly patronizing.
I didn't take it as that. I actually kind of took it as like, go us. We didn't get upset.
I know. We haven't gotten upset yet.
Not at all. We're still genuinely quite joyful to be here.
Let's keep going.
There's still like 5 minutes left in the episode.
So I wanted to talk about this a little bit because I found this really interesting in my travels, in my learnings, that clean energy was the only part of the energy sector that had growth in 2020.
Mm.
So amid the recession triggered by the pandemic, demand for oil fell 8.8% and demand for coal fell 5% compared to the year before, according to the International Energy Agency. And if you compare the world today to the world 18 months ago, the big difference is that only 25% of the world had a decarbonisation horizon. And today, 75% of the world has, the world economy has a decarbonisation horizon, which is a major shift. And if, you know, maybe we could have even put that in our COVID episode.
Yeah.
Because the pandemic has taught us a lot, you know. And officials have consistently underestimated the pace at which solar and wind will come into the electricity system and displace fossil fuels. And that's, you know, something that I think it's an exciting thing that's been underestimated almost, you know, to me. I've got a little quote from Australian mining magnate Twiggy Forrest. I can't get my words out tonight. And he says, our mate Twiggy says, the journey to replace fossil fuels with green energy has been moving at glacial speed for decades, but is now violently on the move. And again, I hope that I did him justice.
Yeah.
I've actually met Twiggy Forrest and I didn't.
Oh, no? You're not wearing RMs.
So a little bit of lefty perspective from me. The Energy Security Board has predicted that clean energy share of supply could be 40% by 2030. And Labor have recently announced a $20 billion Rewiring the Nation plan to upgrade the energy network so it can harness the booming solar power and replace the aging coal fleet. Wind and solar power are the lowest cost way of providing energy. And we have the potential to have a power system where 3/4 of our energy can come from renewable energy sources. And further to that, the Australian Energy Market Operator have said that without these upgrades, the contribution of wind and solar resources could be cut by 50 to 60% of their potential, which I find very, very scary. And this is something that maybe is just human nature, but the plan... won't try and say it again. Seems very new and shiny and exciting to me. And, you know, I know you have thoughts on innovation. I do too. And new technologies. I think it is really exciting. But there are things like this, like upgrading the you know, the power grid, which aren't that sexy. I mean, no one wants to see, you know, ScoMo or Albo in a hard hat next to some power. Like, you know, what's the Instagram post going to look like? So I think that it is really interesting that you know, and maybe on brand, like I said before, like we said before, for the Liberal government to go with something that is quite innovative and quite sort of new technology and incentivizing big business too.
Yeah. It's funny though, because the statement you've just made is almost like totally counter to like regular left side of the spectrum.
Yeah.
Like ideology, you know, where normally it would be like the left is like, flip the tables, to quote episode 2. Flip the tables.
Have you watched Les Mis yet?
No, I haven't. funny story. I had one friend be like, it's really boring. And I was like, oh, huge. Anyway, normal left ideology is flip the tables and create a new system. Mm. And you're saying, no, I don't want to see that with this. I want to see us improve the current system. I say that only as something that I found interesting, not as like I'm biting at you here.
No.
I don't quite see it like that, unsurprisingly. You know, like, we were having a chat in the car last night about, it was a real soapbox moment for me about the role of, like, technology and innovation.
Mm.
And, you know, I just think that the untapped potential of technology, we will never be able to measure, the potential of technology. But also, when you give optimal conditions for Australian businesses to like innovate and create new things, particularly in the technology space, when technology drives every one of our industries, you just don't know what kind of new solution to an old problem that you're funding. And so I see it more as we've recognized that there's a greater opportunity for progress here by identifying and creating the scope of where we'll invest, but we'll also let Australian businesses do what they do best and do what they know best, but challenge them to see how they could apply it to clean technologies and incentivize that by saying, well, there's government money up for grabs if you can show us what your clean technology is. So I don't necessarily, but I don't often default to thinking that it's like a political move, right? Because I'm the optimist and, you know, the naive romantic. But I don't necessarily see it as like the Liberal government have to be perceived as being new and shiny, because in fact we know that most Australians are afraid of innovation because they think it means their jobs are getting taken by robots. You know, so I actually don't see it as like a political move. I see it as quite a genuine, we've recognized that someone else can do this better. Mm. So what we're going to do is create policy that helps that happen. But I think what the downfall of it is, I think there are big downfalls in if this is the be all and end all climate change policy. And I also think that this could be improved with some really clear milestones and deadlines.
I agree.
But yeah, you know, on a whole, I'm like, oh, cool. They're acknowledging that other people can do stuff better than them.
Mm. And I guess I agree. Obviously, when we began talking about this, you know, I do think that investment in new knowledge and learning is really cool to see the government having a part to play in that.
Yeah.
I just think that wind and solar and some of our existing technologies and, you know, beefing up our grids so that they can, you know, handle renewable energy, you know, the electric cars, you know, bringing electric cars into the country and some of those known technologies and capacity building those industries is something that I probably would have liked to have seen first.
Yeah.
I just think it's going to be a quicker outcome.
Yeah. And I wonder if they are where they are talked about, because you can't ignore them, right? Those things all exist. Well, and
we have a lot of sun.
But yeah, I wonder where they are talked about. But we've reached the end of our episode, Annabelle.
Sure have.
And we've done quite well, I think, thus far to get so many thoughts and feelings into the time that we have.
Thoughts and feelings. Look, climate change is something that I am, as I said before, am terrified about.
Mm.
And I feel very, very strongly about. But, you know, in terms of this particular policy and how we dissect it, well, I think we've done a pretty good job.
Yeah, I'm impressed with us.
On the back there.
That's right.
How do you find us, Ray?
Oh, you beat me to it. I love how quickly you spat that out. How do you find us? Don't forget to find us on Instagram. Give us a follow. We are at TLDR_Ozpol. We're available on all of your podcasting platforms. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Give us a review on your Apple Podcasts. Let us know. Give us some recos, you know. Let your friends know you've been listening to a sick...
I can't even deal.
What's a reco?
Recommendation.
No one's pressed the button. I just felt like I should.
We actually hadn't pressed the button. We've been super light on the last couple of episodes.
I pressed the button heaps at the beginning, so I'm trying to limit my button usage.
Bit trigger happy to begin with. Mm. It's been a pleasure.
Likewise.
Thanks so much, Annabelle.
As always.
And can't wait for our next episode. Bye.